Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Hey, everyone. Today's episode is all about toxic friendships, toxic relationships, and what our guest, Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo, calls staying out of the red zone. I am so excited to have her. She is called Dr. E. She is a PhD. She is a therapist, a coach. She is Shaquille O'Neal's head coach for happiness. She's been on the Today Show, GMA, Steve Harvey, cited in the New York Times, basically everywhere and anywhere. I can't wait to have Dr. E drop her gems on you. Are you ready? Elizabeth, welcome to the show, my friend, Dr. E.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's always good to be with you.
Oh my gosh. Well, you are the opposite of a toxic friend. You are what I would call an elevator person.
An elevator friend out of your TED Talk, which was so amazing. So make sure that everyone who's listening has watched it at least 10 times.
Well, I will put a link to my TED Talks. It's called The Secret to Finding Lasting Love, but it's all about defining who your elevator people are. So we'll have a TED Talk note in there about the kind of friends you should have. But Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about toxic friendships and let's hop right into it.
Yeah. So toxic friendships are very one-sided. They are take, 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 take. And you know, you're in a toxic relationship if you feel worse about yourself when you're with that person or even thinking about being with that person, when you dread when they text, when they're asking you to do things over and over and over again. And they're taking, but they are not reciprocating.
And why do we stay in relationships like that?
Well, sorry, it's starting to absolute pour here. So if you hear that, it's Mother Nature. Why do we stay in that type of relationship? Well, a couple of things. One, generalization for women, we want to be nice, right?
And we're pleasers.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to be helpful. And a lot of times in a toxic relationship, it's, no, I'm going to help you out. And then they say they're going to do something and then they don't. So we want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, they said they were going to, they probably will. But in a psychological perspective, if I was going to put like my shrink hat on, there's something called variable reinforcement. And variable reinforcement means you are reinforced. You get, you know, a thumbs up, something positive at variable time frames. So I'll give an example. A slot machine is a variable reinforcement, right? People put their money in, they hit the button, and they never know if they're going to win or lose. And they lose and they lose and they lose and they lose. And suddenly they win. And it's such a hit of dopamine in their brain. It feels so good. And then they go back to losing and losing and losing. But there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's not like every five times then you win or every 5 minutes then you win. It's variable reinforcement. And in psychology, variable reinforcement is actually the best way to get someone to continue to doing what they're doing. So what does that have to do with toxic relationships? In toxic relationships, usually they'll be taking and taking, but then they'll maybe give once, right? It'll be uncomfortable with them. And then they'll give you a compliment. And it feels so good. And you get that dopamine rush in your head that you just want to keep at that relationship to get it again and again.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I can think of so many people I know that have talked about being in relationships like that. And you're right. I mean, one of the greatest hallmarks is if you feel worse about yourself, I think you said, right? And tell us about some other signs that you're in a toxic relationship.
Sure. You no longer trust that person, right? They say they're going to do something and they don't actually do that. You start to question their intentions. You know, it's that internal barometer, your intuition, your gut feeling is telling you something's not right here. Or other people are telling you something's not right. Maybe you're hearing stories about this this person of what they're saying about other people or saying about you or just unkind things that they're doing. You make excuses for them. When people say, oh, no, 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 stay away from them, you make excuses. You justify their behaviors. You tend to feel used. You tend to feel like you are in the red zone when you are with them or feel even, you know, just thinking about being with them. And then they criticize you. They blame you. They put you down. They may be controlling. You can't, you know, being mad at you for hanging out with other friends, for example. All of these are signs of a toxic relationship.
Wow. And it's so interesting. I think toxic relationships can begin, you know, and they're not only for women. I think a lot of times women get, you know, oh, women bring drama. Women are toxic. Women can't have real friendships with each other. But I have a son and I have a daughter, and I've seen toxic friendships happen at the kid level with both genders. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And you're right. It does get attributed more to drama, but I mean, we're talking about friendships. I mean, in a romantic relationships, we definitely can see a lot of toxicity coming from, you know, a man, but it's not gender specific at all. These are people who, and if you think about someone who is the toxic part of a toxic relationship, you know, a lot of times they are hurt. A lot of times they have very low self-confidence and self-worth. A lot of times they haven't had the modeling of what a healthy relationship is. So they don't even know how to have a healthy relationship. That doesn't excuse their behavior. It doesn't mean you should stay in this relationship because they've never had a good relationship, but it does help us better understand. And if we can understand why someone's doing something instead of blaming ourselves personally, it, oh, it's because I'm bad. There's something wrong with me. If we can understand and empathize where they're coming from, then we can really take steps to move forward. And whether that's moving forward to help salvage that relationship or moving forward to say, you know what, I care about you and this is just not a good relationship for me.
Exactly. And here's my friend, Dr. Elizabeth Lombardo, and you should make an appointment to go see her stat. Because you've got some mental health stuff going on, right? You can support people in that way and say, absolutely. I think it would be helpful for you if you talk to a therapist about this.
Absolutely. It's because what happens is a lot of times if you are the toxic person in the relationship, we've already established, you probably, you know, have a lot going on emotionally and psychologically, and you haven't learned those skills. And learning the skills of how to have a healthy relationship are just skills, right? And if you haven't learned them, there's nothing wrong with you. You just need to learn the skills. It's kind of like if you don't know, I don't know, if someone doesn't know how to read, you don't say what's wrong with you. You say, hey, let's teach you how to read. We'll give you that skill and then you'll move on. And then someone who's been in a toxic relationship, what tends to happen is they start to internalize the messages. They either overtly hear, you're no good without me, or that are subtly communicated. And just like a song on the radio, you ever heard a song on the radio and you didn't like it the first time you heard it, and you keep hearing it again and again, and you really don't like it. And then you start singing it yourself because you've internalized it. That's what happens a lot from the messages from a toxic relationship. So it's really important if you are in one or if you have been one to really address your own psychological well-being. And if that's with a therapist or a coach, it's absolutely vital that you take care of what's going on up in your mind so that you move on. Because if you don't, we know, you know, just from, I'm sure, people's experiences, you're more likely to be in a toxic relationship again and again and again and again.
You just want to reenact the trauma of it. And it's comfortable
for
you.
It's not that you want to, it's that it's just so familiar. It's just so habitual. How people treat you, you just get used to that. And again, if you've been in a toxic relationship, a lot of times people think, on a deeper level, they think, well, I deserve this. This is the best that I can get. I would rather be with someone and be unhappy than be alone and be lonely. And what I would say is you can't really attract more positive relationships in your life if you're at this really low vibration, if you're in that toxic relationship. There's only so much energy out there. So it's vital not only that you get out, but you also address your own mental well-being so that you are establishing boundaries, so that you are taking care of yourself, so that you are attracting someone into your life as a friend or a partner or whatever, who is really what you want in your life as opposed to what you're willing to settle for.
Yeah. And I hear you. And if your vibrations and your vibrational state is low and you really think I'm not good enough, or this is the best friendship I've ever had, or I ever could have, everybody leaves me. Right. And when we're messaging ourselves from this, then we become more apt to continue to tolerate this. So at a certain point, when you get yourself into therapy or coaching and work on these issues that you may have from childhood stuff or early mean girl stuff or whatever it was, and address that more fundamentally, that you are good enough and that you are a person that people want to be around, and you elevate your own vibrational level, you'll start to bring in those people. So I love what you're saying. Like, and you know, a question people ask me often is, okay, you know, on the smart dating side, we help people stay, you know, people that have chronically been with red flaggy people or narcissistic people, to not date them anymore, right? That's the intervention that we do. Like, no. There you go again. We got to take those red flags. No. Let's veer back over into safe harbors. When, as a practicing therapist, and you do such amazing work and you're a prolific author, do people come to you and say, I am toxic, I have issues like having good relationships? Is it me? Maybe I'm the toxic one. Because people ask me that all the time. We don't tend to get the toxic people into Smart Dating Academy. We tend to get the ones that have been on the receiving end of that are like left reeling. So my question for them is, why are you accepting this behavior? But do you as a therapist get the people that are like, I suck?
Well, it's interesting because even people who are creating the toxicity in a relationship tend to feel like a victim. So it's very much, I'm in these relationships, it's their fault, or you know, there's something wrong with me that I keep getting into these relationships. But they don't really take accountability. Like, oh, it's because I, you know, keep taking and taking. It's because I put the other person down. Oh, maybe that's why our relationship hasn't been working. Very rarely does the person who's kind of creating the toxicity, they usually don't have that self-awareness.
Right. They don't take the time to say, huh, maybe the common denominator in all of these messes is me.
Yeah.
Right.
No. It's very much blaming, you know, all gender, you know, men, women, whatever, are untrustable. I'm unlovable. I'm never going to find someone. And here's the thing, you know, we get these messages. And by the way, I practice a type of psychology and coaching that's very here and now and future oriented. I know a lot of shrinks spend a whole lot of time in childhood. I don't do that. Having said that, in our first 8 years of life, we're basically operating on a subconscious level. What does that mean? It means we absorb things without even realizing it. So our subconscious is like a sponge. If you think about a sponge, you put it in water, what does it do? Absorbs water, right? Wring it out, put it in milk, what does it do?
Absorbs the milk.
Right? It doesn't say, I don't do dairy. It just absorbs the milk. So our subconscious is very much like that. And so especially, you know, maybe there were messages when we were younger, or if we keep hearing these messages over and over again, we start to internalize them and start to believe them on a deeper level, not rationally. Rationally, I know I'm worthy of love, but deep down, I do not feel it. And that's where you really need to work with someone who can help, the way I phrase it, is rewire your brain, not just affirmations, I believe in myself, but really changing how your mind processes information. And these changes, when you do it correctly, then are sustainable, i.e. you always think this new way.
So amazing. And I'm curious, do you feel that people that create a lot of toxicity in their friendships will also do the same in their romantic relationships?
Yes. Because here's the thing, the drama, which is kind of what we can call the toxicity of a relationship, that drama is, I used it before, it's that dopamine hit, right? Stress. I mean, if you say to someone, do you want more stress? People are like, no way. But people get very used to the stress hormones circulating through their brains and their bodies. And that is their norm. And not having that can be very uncomfortable. I'm going to give an unrelated example, but a lot of times when people start meditating, they'll be like, oh my gosh, it is so exceptionally uncomfortable for me to sit in silence for 5 minutes, because they're so used to having, whether it's, you know, stimulation from a you know, social media or their phone or, you know, whatever. They're so used to all this going on. They're so used to having stress in their life that just having nothingness or opening up to nothingness is really uncomfortable. I don't like to use the word addicted, but I would say people get very used to having all of the stress in their bodies and in their minds. And so that becomes their norm. So yes, definitely the carryover goes into, you know, dating relationships. It can go into family. I mean, I was working with this person once who came to me, and as I'm talking to him, he had disowned his mother, his siblings, his ex-wife, like all of these people in his life. And it was everyone else's fault. It's a consistent pattern.
Yes. Got it. And, you know, a couple of other questions. You say about toxic friendships that we should check our own internal dialogue before declaring a relationship toxic. Yeah. What do you mean by that? Check our internal dialogue.
Well, because it's not events. It's not what someone says or does that makes it toxic. It's our interpretation of it. And right. I have worked with many clients who, and a lot of times it's couples, but it could also be friendships where they view something in one way. But when we're stressed out, when we're overwhelmed, we tend to view things in a more negative way. That's being in the red zone, right? We have high levels of stress. We negative filter. We focus on what's wrong. We personalize other people's actions. And so we may be misinterpreting what the other person is doing, what their intentions are. And so then they're toxic, individual, or I mean, the word narcissist, which, you know, people love to use. There are not as many narcissists, like true narcissistic personality disorder. There are not as many narcissists out there as we seem to give credit for. Do people have narcissistic tendencies? Of course, frankly, we all do sometimes.
We all do.
Right. So, but when we focus only on that and, you know, what you focus on grows. So if you focus on something that they did wrong, and then you all you can think about is what they did wrong and how they made you feel horrible. And then it's their fault that I feel horrible about myself, as opposed to saying, okay, so he was there, she was late, you know, to respond to me. I could view that as toxic. She doesn't care about me. I'm going through a tough time and what's wrong with her. Or I could realize, wow, I'm going through a tough time. I know she's got a lot going on, you know, on her plate too. Let me give her the benefit of the doubt. So instead of just jumping into it's their fault, they're toxic, take a step back and say, how, if you could stick a microphone in your brain, what are you saying to yourself about this person? And then how accurate and how helpful is that?
Amen. One of my key things, and it's hard to do this, is say, wait a second. Is this a story I'm telling myself? Or what is the story I'm telling myself right now about the fact that he was 30 minutes late, about the fact that she didn't respond to my text for 2 weeks, right? And so the story I'm telling myself usually comes down to I'm not important. I'm not good enough. Like if you go down, 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 right?
And of we course, just- yep. I'm not worthy of love. Yep.
And so if you can check yourself with, is this a story I'm telling myself? Could there be another interpretation for what just happened?
So key. And it's also about our rules. We all have rules about how people should act, right? And we often aren't aware of those rules until they've been broken. So if your rule is, if someone texts you, I have a great example. My husband had a friend who his rule was if he called and didn't leave a message, that you should call him back because you'd see on the cell phone missed call. And he got really upset with my husband for not calling back. My husband's like, this is what my husband was working. My husband's like, I have like a gazillion messages. If you didn't leave a message, I just think you butt dialed. So my husband's rule was, you don't have to call back if someone doesn't leave a message. So they both had their own rules. My husband, you know, wasn't really fazed by it, but this other guy was really upset by it and like didn't touch my husband for a couple months. My husband's like, what is going on? But it was because of this broken rule. So ask yourself, if you're shitting on this person, they should do this, they should do that. That is a rule that's broken. And you want to ask yourself, sometimes our rules can be really healthy and helpful. And sometimes they're just things that we've kind of come up with over the course of our lives that we aren't even aware of. So asking yourself, is this a rule? Is it healthy and helpful? And if it is, then you want to clearly communicate to the other person. Here's the deal. When I call you and don't leave you a message, I just want you to know what I'm hoping that you're going to do is that you're going to call me back. And they may say, well, just text me then, or absolutely, now that I know I can do that. But you can have that conversation. Being assertive is key when it comes to good relationships.
Well, and that brings me to my next question. What are some steps that you can take if you've done all the things, you've checked your internal dialogue, and you feel that this is indeed a toxic relationship? Do you break up with this person? Do you just slow fade on them? Like, what are the right steps to do?
Yeah. So I'd say the first thing is to take responsibility. Even if you're in a toxic relationship, you're in it. And what do I mean by that? We teach people how to treat us. If we let people walk all over us, they're going to learn, oh, this is okay. And they're going to keep doing it. And yet the person who's being walked all over, you know, in their mind is just, you know, getting what I would say more and more red zone, more and more upset about it. But they've never taken responsibility for saying, hey, this isn't okay. So first and foremost, realize, take responsibility. That doesn't mean it's all your fault. It doesn't mean you deserve this. It doesn't mean any of this. It does mean that one, you teach people how to treat you. And two, you know, in a relationship, it takes two to tango, i.e. if you decide to get better, the relationship might get better. If you decide to take a step away, that's your choice too. But be empowered as opposed to the victim of this other person.
I love that. Use your voice. Yeah. Say what you need. Yeah. Say what you need and do the thing. Well, you've referred to this a couple of times. What is the red zone?
Dr. E? What is this red zone you've been talking about?
To know what is the red zone and how does it affect us? Is it something we should stay away from?
So it's a psychological red zone, not the football red zone.
Okay.
And the psychological red zone is when we're high levels of stress. Or what in psychology we call distress. Distress is the negative aspect of stress. So it could be feelings like anger, frustration, anxiety, fear, overwhelm, guilt, shame, hopelessness, helplessness, worthlessness, all goes in the distress pile. And distress exists on a continuum from zero, none at all, to 10 out of 10, the most distressed you've ever been. So for example, if you're angry at a 10 out of 10, you might be yelling, you might have the proverbial steam coming out of your ears, that kind of thing. And the red zone happens when we're at a 7 out of 10 or higher. A 7 out of 10 or higher, that's when we're in the red zone. And not only does that involve more intense emotions, but there are actually some biological changes that occur in our brain in terms of which part of our brain we are using in the red zone, as opposed to in what I call the green zone, a 0, 1, 2, 3.
And what happens when we flip into the red zone of the brain?
Yeah. So let's do a quick pop quiz, if we could. Have you ever said or done something you later regretted?
Never. Of course I have.
What was it? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Don't tell me. Have you ever procrastinated or avoided an important project?
Yeah.
You're like, in the last 5 minutes. Absolutely.
I'm like today.
Have you ever, been so overwhelmed that you can't focus or you can't sleep?
Yes.
So all of those are signs that you're in the red zone. When we're in the red zone, our mind focuses on the problem and we get really stuck in it. And there's a biological reason for this. So in the green zone, those low levels of distress, we're using more of our frontal lobe, right? That beautiful structure that differentiates us from other animals. It allows us to engage in executive functioning, problem solving, perspective taking. When we're in the green zone, we can see all different perspectives. This is where confidence happens, right? I'm not perfect, but I believe in myself. This is where love happens, right? Ah, that person's doing something that's annoying. It's okay. It's just who they are. We can see all perspectives. As we go up on this distress scale, our focus narrows so that when you get into the red zone, when I get into the red zone, when anyone gets into the red zone, that 7, that 8, that 9, that 10, instead of seeing the positives and negatives, we're focusing almost exclusively on the negatives. In psychology, we call it negative filtering. We're focusing on what's wrong. And there's a biological basis for this because instead of that beautiful frontal lobe, that rational thinking, our limbic system, emotional reasoning, fight or flight basically hijacks our rational thinking. So we think differently when we're in the red zone, as opposed to when we're out of the red zone.
Okay, so limbic system would mean you get into fight or flight point?
Exactly. So think about it. In prehistoric times, if our cave ancestors heard a rustling in the bush and they thought, it's probably nothing, they probably wouldn't live another moment, right? They took care of the animal or they got rid of it. Then they got out of the red zone. So in the red zone, they're focused on the problem. That's all they can see. They took care of it. They got out of the red zone. So our sources of stress are usually not short-term like that. They're more long-term, right? Health, hello, pandemic, what's happening in the world, financial issues, work issues, all of these are very chronic. And so a lot of people are basically living in the red zone and they're not thinking 100% rationally and they aren't acting 100% rationally, but they aren't even aware of that.
And how does one become aware of it? And if you say, yeah, you know, I kind of live at a 7-8 and I'd like to get out of red and proceed back to green. Like
at least what yellow, do I do? Right?
right. Pink.
So the first thing is, to really be aware of it. And so one way to do that is ask yourself on a scale from 0 to 10, where am I, say, in the past week? And I will say, and giving keynotes, sometimes, wait for it, in person now, it's been delightful. I ask people to share, of course, a lot of times on Zoom, where are you? And usually at least 50% of the audience in the past week, they've been in the red zone average. So just asking yourself that question, I often encourage my clients to have a pop-up on their phone every hour or two. Where are you? What's your number? You know, whatever cue you need to start to be aware of, oh, this is how it feels. But there are three red flags to let us know when we're in the red zone. One is emotions you don't want. When you're feeling very angry or irritable or sad or anxious, it's probably an indicator you're in the red zone. The second thing is physical sensations you don't want. For a lot of people, when they're in the red zone, they get a headache or back pain or GI disturbance. I remember when I was working on my dissertation, I walked by the mirror and this is how I looked. My ears and my shoulders had become one, right? Because all my red zone-ness goes into my neck. So physical sensations is another one. And then the third is behaviors, engaging in behaviors that you don't want to. Maybe you're more irritable with loved ones. Maybe you are over-consuming things, or maybe you're procrastinating and avoiding certain things. All of those are red flags that you might be in the red zone. And the key is to realize that you're in the red zone. And when you are in the red zone, you don't think rationally and you don't act rationally. So I have a client right now. We have so much fun together. But it's really funny because she'll start talking about a problem and she's really worried about something. And then she'll stop and she'll be like, I'm red zone thinking right now. I'm like, you are red zone thinking right now. If you were in the green zone, how might you view this differently? Because again, we think differently. We have to be aware when we're in the red zone, we're not thinking rationally. And this has nothing to do with IQ or, education level. When I'm in the red zone, I don't think rationally, right? And so the key is just to be aware of it and to get yourself out of the red zone, because once you're out of the red zone, then you're using more of that frontal lobe. Then you're using more of your rational thinking. Then you can really determine, is my thinking helpful? What are some steps that I can take? How can I help myself in this situation? But it's really hard to do that when we're in the red zone.
So let's say something happens to me at work, and how do I know, and I'm distressed, and how do I know I'm in my red zone, right? You're like, okay, my emotions, my physical sensations, my behaviors, is there something else? If I can say to myself, you know what, if I can't find any positives in this situation, I'm in the red zone. If I cannot see another perspective except mine, I'm in the red zone. Like, I'm trying to think cerebrally from a day to day, right? I'm a business owner. Is there a question I can ask myself?
So I love that thinking. And here's the deal. All of those questions to even think about require your frontal lobe, which ain't working at that time. So that awareness of, wow, I can't actually see anything positive right now. I must be in the red zone. That's either low red zone or you're not even in the red zone to be able to have that thought.
You're all right. You have to sort of get meta and know. It's like when I'm feeling crappy or mad or frustrated or sad, I have to sort of rise above. Bella, are you able to see other perspectives at this moment? And just asking yourself, at least for me, it sounds like if I can develop that sort of meta awareness, like, wait a second, ask yourself this question right now, it can automatically push me back down to yellow or green just with that awareness.
If you can have that awareness in the red zone, that is great. I would suggest having an external cue for yourself. So maybe if it's something that you've been, you know, dealing with, maybe even having like a post-it on your computer so that it goes, because again, it's really hard to, it's hard to think rationally when we're in the red zone. I'll give an example. I was working with a client and she, it's, there's a particular individual with whom she worked who just put her in the red zone every interaction they had. And she told me, she said, I could hear your voice. My clients always tell me they can hear it. Like I'm like in their heads. She's like, I could hear you telling me to be grateful. And I just didn't want to be. That is a great example of red zone, because in the red zone, like our subconscious feels like it is basically drowning. That's not the time to practice gratitude, right? And so if you notice yourself, I can't, you know, I don't want to think of anything positive right now. That's a great sign that you're in the red zone.
Right. I want to punch her in the face. That's red zone.
That would be red zone. Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, I have a saying, if you think you are, you probably are. So the beauty is, you know, if you take the steps to get out of the red zone, even if you were just at a, what I call, you know, green, yellow, red. So even if you're in the yellow zone, it's not going to hurt things. But if you think you are, you probably are. And also start to train yourself to identify from 0 to 10, where am I right now? You're going into a meeting. Where am I right now? You come out of the meeting. Where am I right now? And while this may seem kind of tedious, the more you do it, the more aware you are of all those subtle signs and symptoms, whether it's your thinking or your emotions or your physical sensations, your behaviors. You start to train yourself to be aware of where you are on the scale.
I love that. And now let's say you have said, okay, I'm training myself to not be an 8 at all times. How do I get myself into green? How do I exit the red zone? Exit stage left, we're going to open the red door and we're going to walk into the green hallway. How do I get to the green hallway?
So the first step is to get out of the red zone. And then the second step is to stay out of the red zone. Because we can't think rationally when we're in the red zone. So the ways to help ourselves when we're in the red zone, I created something called the HELM principle, H-E-L-M. And so when you are in the red zone, you want to grab stress by the helm. H stands for halt. Halt all movement in this region of your body, and that would be your mouth. When you are in the red zone, do not let anything out of your mouth, because that's when we say things we later regret. And don't put anything in your mouth, because that's when we tend to consume things we later regret. I will say, I think it's important that we all remember that we're all human. There were several times, particularly during quarantine, when I had not one, but two hands over my mouth so that I would not respond to one of my children. Because there was just a lot of tension going on. There's a lot of stress going on. So halt, don't let anything out of your mouth, in your mouth. E of the HELM principle is exercise. I'm not talking about 90 minutes of yoga. I'm talking about moving your body, right? Jumping on the bed, doing some push-ups, sit-ups, squats, jogging up some stairs, going for a brisk walk. What does this do? It doesn't change your life, but it releases biochemicals in your brain so that you can start to get out of that red zone. So that's E. L is laughter. You know, laughter is the best medicine, right? The other day, my teenager was being rather teenagery.
Ornery.
And I felt myself creeping up. And I said to her, because in our household, we have conversations about red zone. It's very discussed and normalized because we all get into the red zone. And when we get into the red zone, you know, we apologize for it. My youngest last night was snippy about something. And I knew she was in the red zone. I let her be. She texted me about 30 minutes later. I'm sorry. I was snippy with you. I'm stressed out about my exam. I apologize. That's a 15-year-old. All because she understands the red zone. But anyway, so my other teenager was being teenagery. And I came in here, my home office. I got on YouTube and I watched some SNL skits. The laughter got me out of the red zone then I could go back and have a conversation with her where I could be assertive as opposed to aggressive or passive aggressive. Right? And then the M of the helmet principle is music. I'm sure we've all heard a song that we haven't heard in years, or depending on our age, decades. And it brings us right back to that time, right? Music has a very powerful impact on our emotions. So I recommend to my coaching clients that they have a Get Out of the Red Zone playlist of songs that bring them back to a happier time. Maybe they like the beat, the lyrics. They can dance around, get two of those, you know, aspects of the principle. But it's really powerful because, again, in the red zone, it's hard to think, what song do I want to listen to now? If you just hit play, that can get you out. And then once you're out, that's when you can start to really deal with what is going on.
Wow. And this, it's so great. And I, you know, I'm thinking of how could people that are sitting in offices, how can they do this? Like if they're red zoning, right? And you're their coach and, you know, you have this toxic colleague or, you know, a boss who just wants to put your head underwater all the time, you can halt, you know. Is there a way, do you have a protocol for people that may not be able to, let's say, leave their desk and exercise and squat or dance? And I love all of those things, but like, how do you simmer yourself down when you're in an external environment?
Well, you can go into the bathroom stall and literally do squats. I wouldn't put your hands on the floor. You can do squats. You can run in place. I had a client the other day who I see in person, and we stood up and for 45 seconds, we just sprinted in place. You can do that. For something like that, where it's more chronic, what I would say is prepare yourself before, during, and after. So if you know you're going to meet with your boss who just puts you in the red zone, what are you doing beforehand to enter into that conversation at as low level of distress as possible? Maybe you're going to meditate. Maybe you're going to have a nice cup of coffee. Maybe you're going to go for a walk beforehand. During, what can you do to help yourself? So for example, if it's your boss who's putting you down, but you know your boss loves to talk about, I don't know, their new vacation home, you can ask the question that's going to change his or her energy so that things are a little more pleasant. And then after, have a carrot waiting for you. So if you know you have a meeting with your boss and you're afraid it's going to be really stressful, maybe after you're going to call a friend or you're going to go for a walk or you're going to take a couple minutes and really watch like a 3-minute, you know, comedy clip. All of that is going to help you. So it just helps you, again, get out of the red zone. But then the other thing, and this is more the long term, and this is what I do with my coaching clients, is start to rewire your brain so that red zone thinking is not your automatic thinking. Mm-hmm. Green zone thinking is your automatic thinking. So for example, I don't know, you make a mistake in a presentation. Red zone thinking is, you know, I'm a total failure. I'm going to lose my job. Green zone thinking is, I'm human. I can learn from this. I'll practice more next time. Right. And so helping really rewire what we say to ourselves so that it's more helpful. Because here's the thing. It's not people. It's not circumstances that cause us to be in the red zone. It's our interpretation of it. And I'll give a quick example. I was working, when I was doing my postdoctoral training, I worked at a major trauma center. I was working with a gentleman who was an electrician, and he had an accident where they had to surgically amputate both of his arms to save his life. And I assumed he would be in the red zone, right? I was going to go help him deal with being depressed and helpless and hopeless. And I went in there and he was one of the happiest men I've ever met. Not because he had lost his arms, but because you stuck a microphone in his brain, he was saying, I'm so grateful that my life was saved. I almost died and I didn't. And I know I'm here for a reason and I don't know what it is. And I can't wait to figure it out. That is what you would hear in his brain, as opposed to what frankly might be in my brain. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. You know, again, that kind of red zone-y thinking. So realizing it's not your boss, it's not your customer or colleague, it's not the situation, it's how you view the situation. And so you can learn the skills. Again, it's just a skill, like playing golf. You can learn the skills of how to rewire your brain so that even people who tend to be toxic, you don't have to absorb that energy. You don't have to personalize what they're doing, and you can maintain control of your reaction, even though you can't control what they are doing or saying.
Oh, such sage advice. And Do you have any advice to my singles about red zone thinking and how they can stay out of the red zone? Thinking I'm too old. There's nobody good out there anymore. I'm too heavy. Nobody messages me, you know, or red zone moments where people ask a shitty question like, hey, why have you never been married? Why are you still single? Like, do you have any good tips? And I know you've got to, I know we're going to wrap you soon and I'm so grateful for your time, but any gems you can leave our single listeners with, I would be grateful for.
Yeah. And here's the thing about that red zone thought. There's data to support it, right? I haven't found someone. So see, I am right. Change the focus from being right to being happy. A thought of I haven't met someone yet feels much better than I'm never going to meet someone. And even though there's data support that you haven't met anyone yet, and if you think that way, we know, I mean, we were just talking about energy and, you know, what we think is exactly what we attract. Stop focusing on being right. A lot of people, they say they want to be happy, but really they focus on being right because then they feel like they're in control. Because if I think, well, maybe he is out there or maybe she is out there and then it doesn't happen, then I'm going to be disappointed and that's even worse. So stop worrying about being right and focus on being happy. What thoughts can you buy into, right? Not, oh, I'm going to meet that person this afternoon. That may not be something that you can buy into, but what thoughts can you buy into? I haven't met the right person yet, right? There are so many stories, and maybe I'm sure you share them with your clients, of people who, I mean, I just went to a wedding this 2 weeks ago down in Naples, Florida, a friend of mine, 53 years old, he had never been married, 43-year-old woman, she had never been married. It was the most beautiful thing. And I'm telling you, had it happened when they were 20 and 30, 23 and 33, it would not have been as beautiful. So focusing again, what thought would feel good that I can buy into? One. Two, is this a red zone thought or a green zone thought? It's a game you can play with yourself. I'm never going to meet anyone. Is that a red zone thought or a green zone thought? It's obviously a red zone thought. What might a green zone thought be? And make it a game to kind of come up with these. And then the third piece of advice, as long as I'm shoving things on you, is what I call BFA, best friend advice. If your best friend came to you saying what you are saying to yourself, you're fat, you're ugly, you're old, you're never going to find someone. What would your best friend say to you? You're right. You are all of those things. And let me remind you of three other things that you forgot to acknowledge of how horrible you are.
You're fat, no. You're ugly, and you're a loser. Right.
You would never say that to your best friend, right? And so what advice would you give them? You're an amazing individual. You just haven't found the right person. Think of that advice that you would give to someone you love and give it to yourself. We speak to ourselves not only in ways we wouldn't speak to our best friend, we speak to ourselves in ways that we wouldn't even speak to our enemies, right? And for some reason, we give ourselves permission to do that. Stop that. What goes on up here impacts every single thing that goes on in your life. And you have to change what goes on up here in order to, whether you want to call it manifest, you want to call it experience, you want to call it whatever it is, you have to change what's going on up here to change what's going on out here. Out here is a reflection of what's going on up here. And I'm not talking about thinking Pollyanna, I'm perfect and everyone's going to love me. I'm not talking that. I'm talking about rational, helpful thinking and starting to rewire your brain so that it works for instead of against you.
I love this so much. The metaphor I was thinking of right now is, picture yourself, are you looking through the world through your green zone glasses, or do you have the red glasses on, right? And if you're feeling bad, sad, angry, scared, frustrated, stressed, whatever that is, the distress that you talk about, you've got your red glasses on. Yeah. Put on the green glasses, right? And be better. And the beauty of this, what I love, what Elizabeth is doing for me and hopefully for you, is empowering you to know that you have agency in feeling happier in any given situation. Put the right glasses on. Yes. Put the right glasses on. Dr. Lombardo, Dr. E. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here with us. So, so, so grateful. And I'm going to put a link to her book, Get the Red Zone Book, people. I'm going to put a link to her website if you want coaching from her. She's amazing. She's all of the things. Thank you. Thank you for being with us. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.